This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your tournament recap for the WGC FedEx St. Jude Invitational. And joining me to break it all down, let's bring him in. It's Kyle Porter. What up, KP?
Well, we don't have enough. There aren't enough hours in the day for this podcast. I'm giddy about this one. Let's get the intros through and let's get it on. Let's do it.
We've got Mark Immelman, who is on the eve of heading out to the PGA Championship. What up, Mark?
Hey, you're diffusing a little bit over here. After listening to you two guys at 10:45 p.m. last night, I was going to do everything in my power to make sure I got onto this podcast alongside you guys. By the way, how's it?
Kyle, he called our conversation after round three drivel, I believe was the word.
another name for it would be correct. On point, I think.
Wait, Nostradamus, man, all props to you. I'm going to kneel at Mount Kyle for just about 2 seconds. Well done.
I've only been doing this 8 years. I finally get one prediction right.
154 hole lead. 154.
Yeah.
Hole.
Yeah. Real brilliant over here. The number one player in the world.
No, good job. I appreciated the back and forth, the banter, you guys. It kept me awake for a little while. There were one or two things that got my South African hair standing up a little bit, but you know me. I'm old and decrepit and cantankerous at times.
Nobody's ever called you decrepit, I'm pretty sure.
I just like to point out something Mark just said. Kept me awake for a little while is really what we strive for on this golf podcast.
Right. Yeah. Not the whole time, just a little while.
The First Cut Pod, keeping you awake for a little while.
Some of my favorite golf listening.
My dad actually told me, shout out Tom Hallux, last night that he fell asleep listening to our podcast. So thanks, Dad.
Wow. There you go.
It only kept him awake for a little bit of time.
We are killing it. New segment. How about this? Driving the Tour presented by Volvo. We get to provide our insights and analysis. And Kyle Porter, your insight and analysis from the round three podcast was second to none. You saw this coming with JT, and I think we have the clip right here.
I honestly think JT is two back of the real lead with Fowler at 10 under, because I don't trust Brendan Todd's swing and I don't trust Ben On's putting. And so if you say Fowler's the real lead at 10 under and JT's two back, nine to one's pretty sweet. I kind of think he's going to shoot like a 65 and win on Sunday.
How about that, KP? He does exactly what you said he was going to do. Congratulations.
Well, you guys should have seen me when he was on 18 and he flares it out to the right. And I'm thinking, just don't make a bogey here. Don't shoot a 66 and win. Like, I cared more about that hole than if I actually had money riding on the event. So, we can get into it. Unbelievable performance from him. Mark, I've got a little... Okay, so is that backwards?
No, it's good.
That's correct.
Okay, so this is how many wins JT has this decade. And this is how many days are left in the decade.
Well, two down, 23 to go. Hold on a second. Hey, Brendan. Yeah, nice to hear from you. Oh, you want to talk to Carl? He said something about your golf swing? Hold tight for a second.
That's fine. Look, hey, here's the deal. We're not comparing these guys to me and Rick. We're comparing them to Justin Thomas and Brooks Koepka. And Brendan Todd was really good for 54 holes, and he was really bad for 18 holes. And, you know, that's kind of the way it goes for him.
It's the brave man that calls it how it is, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it is what it is. And, you know, the JT and Koepka thing, well, do we, You go ahead, Rick. Do we want to get into JT?
Well, we're going to jump into JT real quick, but I know, Mark, you took umbrage with one particular phrase that Kyle mentioned in that round three pod. You called it Kyle called it the real lead. And what did that bring up for you?
Well, it was the quip amongst many that sort of woke me up. You know, imagine that that gif of who was the Undertaker, that WWE guy that just, you know, wakes up and he's alive.
right out of the coffin.
That was me on the couch. And I was like, because Kyle way back, and I don't hold grudges. Well, maybe I do, listening to myself now. My brother held a 2-stroke lead on the eve of the final round of the 2008 Masters. And there was a rule in the house not to watch any golf television whatsoever. So I go to the room and I switch on the TV and I'm watching Golf Central or whatever it was. And there's Brandle Chambly spouting off going, and Brandle and our buds, right? And he goes, well, the real lead is Brant Snedeker. Now that my brother at this stage is the rookie of the year and he's done a few things around the globe. And he goes, the real lead is Snedeker. So if Tiger and these sorts of guys just line up Snedeker and get in front of him, they've got the Masters won. So I took that sort of personally. And after Trevor won by 3, I called him out that evening. He was at some get together there. I'm like, Brandle, I got a bone to pick with you. And he's like, what? I'm like, so you called it a real lead, essentially slapping my brother in the face. Oh, no, I didn't mean it like that. Well, you know, so maybe the real lead thing sticks in you somewhere, you know?
Well, Brandle didn't have the advantage of there were no strokes gained for Augusta National at the time. So he didn't know if Trevor was putting it well or hitting it well.
If there's no strokes gained, what on earth are you going to do in November?
I don't know. Watch golf or something?
Maybe. Okay, cool. Let's do it together.
All right, let's jump into this. Justin Thomas, your new number one player in the world. Victory number 13 on the PGA Tour. As we know, the third youngest to ever get to 13, Kyle, behind Tiger Woods and Jack Nicklaus. That is a pretty good list to be on. I think we know what you feel about Justin Thomas in the future, but talk me through what you saw on Sunday, because I think he was magnificent.
Well, the thing that stuck out to me on Sunday, and I'd actually like to hear Mark kind of expound on this, because he's got a better viewpoint and knowledge of it than you and I do. JT is so good at swinging different speeds, right? So he'll go as hard. I don't know what his swing speed is off the tee, but he'll go as hard as he can off the tee. And then the shot, I keep going back to the shot on 16. So he punches out and he's got like 102 in on 16. And it's kind of a weird angle. It's not a great angle, honestly. It's kind of over that trap at the front of 16. And the smoothness with which he swings from that distance. I mean, I texted our group chat. I got a take for you guys. I said if Rory had JT's game from 125 and in, he'd have like 9 majors. Mm. And another one of the guys said maybe like 19 majors. I mean, he's so good from 125 and in. And I think that ability to not just be super long off the tee, but to slow it down and have that kind of control from 125, 150 and in, I don't know. That is because Rory always has talked about how he struggles with, like, he almost swings it too fast. And so he sometimes struggles to control his distances, I think, in a way that JT is really, really good at. And that was the impressive part for me. You're going to get into trouble. How do you get out of trouble? And how do you save yourself with your short game late, like he did on Sunday? I thought that was super impressive.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I have to give a bunch of credit to Jimmy Johnson and wish him all of the very best. I hope the tests are going all right and there's nothing sinister on the go. But Ben Hogan, now, yeah, this, I'm the old guy, so I'm going to go there, okay, to put it into some context. Hogan said somewhere he hit a ball that finished close to a target and someone said, that's a great shot. And apparently the legend goes, Hogan goes, how can you say so? You didn't know how high I was wanting to hit this thing. Mm. Even though it finished close to the target.
Yeah.
And the lesson goes, Hogan said, it was all about trajectory, apex of the flight, and the speed at which the golf ball was going. because that if you have a handle on that stuff, you're pretty well on the way. Because they can deal with left and right. Because the professional game, you saw it with Thomas, unlike Brooks. Thomas, when he missed left and right, he missed in sort of the safe zone coming down the stretch. So it was a veteran sort of a directional performance. But then to be able to change speeds, and it was Jimmy Johnson who joined Thomas a few years ago, and he had seen Steve Stricker play. He'd seen Nick Price play front seat. So he'd seen what these great sort of exponents of scoring shots did. And he said to Justin, who just went full bore when he got on the tour, everything was hard and high, kind of like McIlroy. He's like, you got to learn this off-speed delivery. And you guys make great comparisons to other sports. I don't know American sport well enough to do that, but it's essentially like you get some stud coming out of high school in baseball. He throws gas, right? The first thing they're going to teach him is how to throw an off-speed pitch and make it look like the fastball, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's the same thing here, because JT, he'll move his body fast and then he'll slow down. And when he does the slow down thing, it's with tremendously soft arms. Unlike Rory, on the other hand, will cut the follow through off, but you still see vigor and sort of hardness about the thing. And so Justin, he's got that stuff taped, man. And there was only one that didn't work or out, and that was on 12 that I thought was the shot that could have essentially tripped him up, but he did yeoman's work to get up and down for the bogey. But otherwise, that little off-speed wedge, I would advocate for him being probably one of the best from about 125 and in on the PGA Tour right now, because of the fact he can go in hard, high spinning, or he can flat that little low one in there with a little less spin. And those ones he hit, all those soft ones, they were all backhoe locations. 12, 15, 16, even the one into 17, because if you hit a ball hard out the rough, it flies.
Yeah.
And he... Even out of heavy rough, he went smooth. He went soft. I mean, it was almost genius to me, and it was highly impressive.
I think it was some of the skill set that makes you like look at his trajectory and say, "Wait a second here! Like how good is he going to be over the next 10 years?" Now, so the comp that I actually just thought of, like as you were talking there, because I love what you're saying, and I want to see what Rick thinks about this, because I know he played baseball. A little Mark Pryor-ish in that, like, I think the mechanics are, I don't know that anybody has better mechanics in terms of the swing. And he always, like, Mark Pryor always threw hard. I can't remember exactly how his career went, but I think it was not until he turned pro where he learned some of the off-speed stuff. And then that's elite as well. What do you think about that, Rick?
Well, that's good because, okay, when you're Mark Pryor and you're, like, the number one high school pitcher in the country by a mile, you don't need anything but the fastball, right? Like you just blow it by everybody. Yeah. It is only when you get to the majors that you have to learn this stuff. And honestly, it reminds me a lot of Justin Thomas, because I think his game is so mature, or it's getting so much more mature. Yeah. I think that he, you know, on 15, he gets away with a really poor shot that he hit that gets lucky, goes across the cart path. But like in that moment, he can take advantage of it. Or he knows when to put the foot on the gas, or he knows when to just take his lumps. And I don't know if that comes from his dad being an influence on him growing up and setting that mindset, Mark. But I just feel like he is so much more mature than a lot of the other 27-year-olds on tour.
You've hit the nail on the head. You call it mature. I kind of call it old school in a way. And you have to credit his father and his grandfather, both PGA professionals, and his dad. Whenever I catch up with him and I see them on the range and I talk to him on the course, I'm like, so what are you guys doing? You know, trying to get the golf swing inside. And it's the same thing every single time. There's never any panic. There's never any like, oh, we got to do this or do that, or someone's doing this. There is this maturity, to use your term, which is very appropriate. But it's this old school kind of thing to him, because the new golf ball needs to get it hit hard. The thing spins less, so you've got to hit it hard to spin it. But Justin is able to go, okay, well, the back hole location, I'm going to hit this thing easy. Let it take a couple of jumps and then check. Well, you'll see someone like a Rory, for argument's sake, try and fly it on the back plateau with spin. And then all of a sudden you hit it through the back and you're making a number. So that is the maturity that you guys call it. And it's kind of old school in a way.
Justin Thomas is going to be one of the favorites for next week at the PGA Championship, along with Brooks Koepka, who I thought we were going to get a heavyweight bout there on the final hole, maybe get us into a playoff. But KP, I honestly think that the last couple of holes for Brooks Koepka on Sunday is essentially a microcosm of what we've seen from him this season, where he bombs in a birdie putt on 17 to have life, to apply the pressure, and then he yanks one left into the water immediately on his next shot on 18 to kind of play himself out of the tournament. And I'm left simultaneously thinking, this guy is so unbelievably good. He can overpower any golf course, but also feeling disappointed because the only results he cares about, obviously, is winning, and we haven't seen it in a year.
Yeah, it's a great point, and it's a great call. And I don't know. I almost think that this week makes me feel like he should be the favorite next week. Like, I know he didn't close. I know he didn't really putt that well. He hasn't putted that well over the last really month or so. But the way he's hit the ball over the last two, I mean, we talked about this, even at the 3M Open, he hit it pretty well. And then he hit it great this week. He was first in approach shots, third from tee to green. Now, I don't know that you can go to Harding Park and hit. He hit 31 of 56 fairways. As Mark knows, that's going to be problematic. That's not. I've a little bit talked myself into Harding Park being kind of Bethpage-ish, in that if the rough is way up and it's playing like super deep, that there's only like nine guys that can win it, right? Like you go to Bethpage and it's like, well, Abraham Answer can't win. You know, like Kevin Kisner can't win. But DJ, Rom, JT, Koepka, that's sort of the vibe that I'm getting. And who knows? It might not play out like that, but that's sort of how I feel going in. And if Koepka's hitting it like this, I don't know, man. Like, I've flipped so much on this over the last 2 weeks. I feel like he should maybe be the favorite going into Harding Park.
There's a lot to like about what he did last week. But the point that I want to make is that of all the courses we've been to since Kolff's return, it's the first one really that he's played well in the past before. And he spoke earlier in the week of how he's very comfortable around Southwind and the golf course sets up for his eye. Now, he played well at Heritage, but otherwise all the other courses he hasn't had much success on, even Muirfield Village. And so he got to a place where he was comfortable. So that is always something that sort of will raise my eyebrow, because I look for a guy, even though they might not be in the best of form, to find a way to cobble something together. And so he did some of that. The thing that I think is good news for Koepka, but I wouldn't install him as a favorite just yet, is that he got a barometer on how the golf swing's operating under pressure, because the pressure late contending for a tournament is different. You can't simulate that anywhere. And we saw a couple late rights on 16, 17, and then we saw the fast left on 18. So you know, to me, you talk about being able to drive it. Now, you made a good point earlier where you were like, okay, well, if you can bash it off the tee, you can get some short clubs out of that heavy rough. And so you got the advantage. Certainly, but I know this for certain. If you're fighting a right-left miss around there, you're going to have yourself a pretty tough time. So look, right now, there's sunshine on the horizon for Team Koepka, more than there has been in a long while. And you've got to give Pete Cowan credit. You've got to give Claude Harmon credit for saying, okay, let's get another voice in here and maybe help him over the hump. You've got to give credit to Phil Kenyon, who came in and neatened up the putting stroke in a hurry. I mean, that thing was messy the last few weeks, and they did incredible work in just a couple hours. So there's a lot of good stuff going on. Does he have all sorts of confidence? Great. Yes. And that's great for him, because that's how he operates. But I still think there's a little bit of going to go, and maybe he continues to play into some form. But the one thing he knows for sure now is, what do I feel like when the pressure's up? Because the thing about contending this week in Memphis, from tee shot number one on Thursday, you're feeling like that the entire week in a major championship. And so you're playing under that level of pressure, that modicum of pressure. And so it exposes stuff in a hurry. So I think he's got an idea, and I'm sure they'll work into this come Tuesday or Wednesday, or whenever they decide they're going to work for the next couple of days.
I like that a lot. I think the growing optimism around Koepka, at least for myself personally, just seeing the upside, seeing the ceilings, unbelievable. He can still just thrash any golf course. It's unbelievable. I want to pivot back to Justin Thomas for a second, gentlemen, because I think we should charge $9 a month to read our group chat. Because there was a good Justin Thomas, Phil Mickelson. You know, this stemmed off of what, KP? This stemmed off the 25 wins in a decade thing, right? And then we started comparing Phil Mickelson and Justin Thomas's career trajectories, which kind of stemmed off of Bones being on JT's bag, right? This is how this whole thing evolved.
Yeah, which, by the way, I needed JT to ask Bones to pull a pin late, like last three holes. That would have been
really.
That would have been sick.
Hey, did you see? Apparently, now you can't believe everything you read on Twitter. Apparently, but I saw that when Phil walked onto the first tee, he didn't even look as much in Bones' direction. He sort of shook JT's hand. He's like, "Okay, let's roll." There weren't any pleasantries at all. And
that they exchanged pleasantries like on the putting green earlier? And they didn't have to say hello on the first tee.
I don't know. Again, you can't believe I just saw this on Twitter and it made me giggle.
Okay.
So I'm glad you brought this up. Of course, I'm glad you brought it up. JT won. I think here's what I was thinking about on Sunday. It's almost like I feel like JT's career is kind of going like his tournament went, to where on Friday night, can you see it coming? Maybe, maybe not. But it was there. Like the numbers were there. The stats were there. We talk about the statistical profile was there, like Rick and I talk about all the time. Is it definitely going to play out with him winning the tournament? No, of course not. Like, a couple of times Brendan Todd's going to win that tournament. Ricky might win it. Brooks might win it, whatever. But the trajectory was there. And I think that's true of his career also. I mean, you said it earlier, Tiger, Jack, JT, and then Rory. I mean, how to categorize that other than he's on an all-time trajectory. You know, the point that, and Mark can, we can have a rebuttal here, but point that I made, like, through his first 150 events, he's played 152 now, 13 wins, a major. He's on a trajectory to where you're like, wait a second, this is better, way better than a DJ, a Jason Day. It's right there with Rory. It's better than Phil. I mean, it's an unbelievable trajectory. And I don't know that, I think people are missing it. Like, I think we're underrating JT. That's kind of the gist of my argument, because he's doing it in what I think is the best era of golf of all time.
Nobody is underrating Justin Thomas. Nobody whatsoever. And most notably, his peers. Everyone in the locker room knows that if Justin Thomas, and this is one point you made last night in the previous podcast, that if Justin, he's one of those names, he's like a Spieth when Spieth was, you know, at the top of his game. Spieth would finish. Everyone knew it. There are certain golfers that will get into contention that won't close. They won't close the deal very well. And Justin's a finisher, and he's got a complete game. He doesn't have a glaring weakness, unlike some guys that have sort of been fantastic for a while. I giggled at you. I do. I find you fascinating. I mean, I love your social media feed, and I love your takes. But comparing Phil to a twin engine plane with no landing gear and stuff.
We're talking okay. About styles. So that's what Phil was, stylistically on the course. He's all over the place. I mean, he I think he was at the
should 16th. I remind you of a podcast that you guys did where it was listing the all-time golfers of all time during our pandemic thing, right? Where did you put Phil into that list? He was 11th, or what did you put him in?
Oh yeah, he's like 10 or 11 for me.
All right, so you're telling me Justin Thomas. Okay, yeah, yes. The trajectory is there, but I'm going with what I have, because I've seen too many folks. Jordan Spieth, there's the reference, Jacob. I've seen my brother in my household get done in by injury. I've seen stuff. Tiger Woods was supposed to obliterate Jack Nicklaus's record. He was supposed to. That didn't happen. I'm just like, you know, calling someone an all-timer when he's 27, how old is he?
27.
All-time trajectory. All-time trajectory.
Yeah, okay. Sure, he's on an all-time trajectory. Rory was too. Rory still.
Well, but JT's already had a better career than Adam Scott. Justin Rose.
Adam Scott's not an all-timer. No, it's Justin Rose. They're good.
They're really, really good in an era where, again, I think it's, I think, and Rick brought this up, and I'm glad he did. I think winning, if you win 25, 30 times in this era and win three or
in
four
a decade.
Majors. Yeah, in a decade. That's going to.
Are you going to keep that one for a while? Are you going to keep that note card? Yeah, by your desk for the next 10 years? So how does this work now?
Yeah, it's just going to be marks. It's like the tiger. It's like the tiger poster behind Rick.
Oh, yeah.
I think winning 25, 30 times, winning four or five majors in this era is equivalent to what Phil did, winning 44. The era that Phil thrived in is not as good as it is now. It's not.
I can't.
That's good. We can have this conversation a lot for the next 10 years. We don't have to do it all right now. Here's what we will do. We've got to have a little bit of a therapy session.
Oh gosh.
Some of the guys who fell off the lead. And to do that, we've got to bring in Greg Ducharme. So we're going to do that on the other side. First, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And we're back. Welcome in, Greg Ducharme. First of all, Greg, welcome. Looking good in studio.
Yep, in studio. Thanks for having me, guys. I'm sorry I'm late. I apologize. But it's been tough. I've been kind of coping in this after this final round. So I needed really the first half of the show to kind of get myself organized.
You missed my decade of JT counter. Two wins. There's 3,439 days left.
Well, I think that's pretty much locked up now at this point. Don't you?
He's on pace for 34 in the decade. So,
yeah, Mark, you might just want to buy out right now. It's
I told you, I'll take that bottle of wine in 2027.
Yeah. You always want to play the under, though. It's like Price is Right.
That's probably true.
Yeah, because the under is winning until it's over. So yeah. It's like, all right. Well, Greg, let's jump into this, my man, because your buddy Ricky Fowler had yet another disappointing Sunday. I was rooting for him. I thought this was going to be the WGC breakthrough for him. Just could not get it going. I'm actually still scrolling down the PGA. Okay, here we go. Finished with a 73, 3 over par, T15. Not good.
No.
Yeah, I need some help because he gets off to a great start, right? He comes out like Ricky has to do it eventually. And like we talked about this on Friday, Rick, he gets himself, maybe he gets kind of a bad rap for his success or lack thereof in tournaments. Maybe he should be winning more often than he does. Well, it seems definite now, but like this is kind of what I was saying about it. It's how it happens. And he comes out and he gets off to a great start. Birdies 2 and 3. And then after he's 2 under through 3, he's the guy. This is his tournament to win. And then he bogeys number 4, right? He hits it to like 50 feet and 3 whips it. And then he makes bogey on 7 and bogeys 9, which is a big one for me. Cause when you get to the ninth hole this is your opportunity now to finish the 9 under par. And now you're off and running. You're back in position. And well, what does he do? He makes a bogey. And then he goes to number 12 and makes a double bogey. So it's just, it's extremely frustrating for me as a fan of Ricky, because I feel like this is a theme and this is like the fade out at the end. And I'm just not sure how to handle it.
The something that came up on HQ at some point today was kind of in regards to the swing changes, and I'd like both you, Greg, and Mark's opinion on this is
definitely not mine.
Well, definitely not.
Hey, where, Brandon Todd's still ringing in over here.
Where
I was right. I don't know what to tell you guys. It is what it is.
Yeah, where,
they are who we thought they were.
Well, yeah. Very clever.
Nick Faldo pointed out on the telecast that it appears Ricky Fowler has an issue hitting that left pin position because that draw is the one thing that's not really coming around for him, Greg. And I'm just wondering if that's like, you know, we've seen the progression through the swing changes. If this is just like the one last little thing he just can't get right, and he's, you know, blocking it out to the right, and it's costing him a few shots.
See, when Nick Faldo, when he was playing, he always had kind of all these shots, right? He always said he had the same backswing with four different finishes that created his high fade, his low fade, his high draw, his low, and his low draw. He worked it both ways. And the modern player doesn't necessarily have to do that quite as much. We've seen players like Brooks Koepka win hitting a single shot shape, hitting just a fade. We saw it at the PGA Championship just 2 years ago. So you don't necessarily have to have all the shots to win the way you used to. And part of that is because of the trajectory of the game. Your players are starting to hit it higher. And you can hit high fades at left hole locations. And you also, there's nothing that says you have to hit a draw into a left hole location. You can hit a fade to the middle of the green and be fine. This is not a golf swing thing for Ricky, in my opinion. It's just not. We've seen him go through a number of different swing renditions. We've seen him go through changes that have all been successful. They've led to great results. But now it's the same thing. This is a hurdle that's a little bit different that he's proven. He can do it. He can win on Sunday. He's proven it before. But it's just he seems to go the other way more often than not in these moments. But I'm interested to hear what Mark says about the swing.
Well, Mark, and also, I assume that the stress of a Sunday, you know, amplifies everything that's going on out there. And if you've got any little thing wrong, either mentally or with the swing, you'll be exposed on a Sunday.
Yeah, there certainly was an element of that in there. And just to build on Faldo's point a little bit, it's not the left hole location. It's just the fear of the left miss. Mm. And to me, I see an element of two-directional fear right now with Faldo, with Ricky, I should say, because you watch him on a tee shot like 12, which is the hole's just a whisker over 400 yards, but it typically plays into a quartering breeze out the left. And for any right-handed golfer, that is going to expose you if you're not very comfortable and you got water down the right-hand side, Heartbreak Hotel, to get my Elvis reference in there, right? And so he hits a fast left off the tee. He's cooked. He's got the ball in the downhill line, the rough. From there, he hits it in the water. He didn't have anything. I am questioning, to Greg's observation, why he just doesn't go with a one-dimensional pattern. And so that it says to me that, okay, the golf swing is gaining traction. And he certainly looked better timed. I will concede that because we had him Thursday, Friday in Golf Channel coverage. And I thought he looked very good. But the pressure then is different. Then all of a sudden on Sunday afternoon, it's a different animal. And then you're trying to hit shots that you don't really have. The one thing I know for certain is that under pressure, you better have something you can go to. To get back to Justin Thomas, he's got his fairway finder. Low tee, squeeze fade out there, put in play. It's kind of a version with a driver of Tiger's stinger. And everybody does. Brooks is now finding some form because his fade was weak right, hard left. Now the fade is starting to start left and peel into the center of the target. So I'm judging by this that he and John are on the right direction. They're on the right tack, if I should say, but still there's some work to go, because when you start missing in two directions, that's talking of a lot of golf club engineering through contact. And when that's happening, the lines are bad coming down, the timing's bad. And some of that you can ascribe to pressure, but other stuff is just, to use Tiger's terms, reps. You got to get out there and just grind and grind and grind. Because the one thing Felder's always told me, he goes, the one thing he did very well was he called it his 1 yard fade. If he had to, he would go to the shot and then he would move targets. He would say, I look at the flag and he would go, what do I want and what can I do? Okay, I want to hit it there. Can I do that right now? No. So then you move your target. You move 20 feet right of the flag. And so you build on this till what do I want and what can I do intersect? And you'll hear him on the broadcast oftentimes talk about moving the targets. And I'm not sure I've seen Ricky do that just yet under pressure. Because he's got a good golfing IQ about him. And when you putt the way he does, he's just going to get the ball on the green a few more times and he should be okay.
Yeah, he's certainly not going to get relief from the pressure next week, as you mentioned, Mark. That starts Thursday, first hole. You feel it. Kyle, I'm ready for you. I'm ready to bring you back in here on Brendan Todd, who another guy. Okay, let's do this. Brendan Todd has had simultaneously an unbelievably surprising, awesome season and also a very disappointing season. He's won twice, which I don't think anybody saw coming. He's also slept on three 54-hole leads that he's not been able to convert. And in two of them, the two most recent, he hasn't even finished inside the top 10. This has been a pretty, I don't know how to describe it, a pretty crazy year for Brendan Todd.
Yeah, it has. But, you know, we talk about the way your weeks are structured all the time, right? Like if you flip the rounds around and he shot on Thursday what he shot on Sunday, we'd be like, oh, Brendan Todd, great year. This is awesome.
We'd be like 100-1 at the PGA Championship. I'm in.
Yeah, let's do it. But the reality is that when you hit it like Brendan Todd, and specifically when the majority of your strokes in a given week are coming with the putter, you're going to get boat race by the Justin Thomases and Brooks Koepkas of the world. Like that, it just is what it is. Like I mean, for what Brendan Todd's ceiling is, he's having an unbelievable year, right? Like when you're 211th or whatever on the tour in driving distance and your ball striking is just kind of, it's okay. It's not like great in a given week. I mean, what are the real expectations there? Are you gonna hold off a Justin Thomas and a Koepka and a Mickelson and a Matthew Fitzpatrick who's playing really well? I just don't think that's realistic. So I actually look at Todd's season and I see what you're saying with the 54 hole leads, but I think he looks back on it and says, "Man, two wins. I contended in these events. Are the Sundays disappointing? For sure. But I think you have to be realistic about what." You can actually accomplish on the tour, especially in a big boy field like we saw this week.
Agreed. And this is sounding better in my head than what I think it's going to come out. So I'm going to be very smart about how I craft this comment. But on this podcast, and I've been in conversations elsewhere where people have said, Brendan Todd is a finalist for Player of the Year on the PGA Tour. He's certainly going to win the comeback player. Of that, there's no doubt. I mean, if he doesn't win that, there has to be an investigation.
Does that still exist? Is that still an award?
You guys think he could win that back-to-back years if he has like another good year next year?
Stricker's won it like three times, hasn't he?
Yes. back-to-back years. I think 06, 07, he won.
They renamed the award, Kyle. I think it's called the Courage Award or something like that. But I think it's the same award renamed. I'd have to look into that, but I'm pretty sure that's what they're
doing. Okay. But anyway, so remember the big brouhaha when Kyle, you and me, when we were lobbying, when there were discussions about, okay, who's going to be the player of the year, Koepka or McIlroy? Koepka with all the majors, McIlroy with five wins in a FedEx Cup. You and I both delved into the numbers as the players did, and they were like, okay, it was Rory's year. And this caused a few folks to get upset. So I'm saying, with all this conversation about Todd being player of the year, how are people grading him? The fact that he's winning, or the fact that he's playing above himself, or the fact that this is an unreal story? Because a lot of this conversation is a function of people like us.
But I think that's a great point because let's be realistic here. Like Brendan Todd does not have the talent that Justin Thomas or Rory McIlroy have. And so if he was
a star in school, huh? I mean, he was unbeatable in high school and college. Yeah. Now you make the right assessment. He just doesn't have the fast ball that they do.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he had a couple ball speeds that were like 200, that were 156, nowhere near 200. I mean, they're like a lot of these guys, three irons. It's probably like a Bryson three iron is his ball speed with a driver. So he's at a huge disadvantage there.
this is what I wanted to say, and maybe this is how it was supposed to come out. Thursday after the first round, Rick and I get on this thing. Greg and I get on this thing, and we hit the big things. McIlroy playing badly, Koepka playing well, blah, blah, blah. And then the question is, so what are we looking for tomorrow? And I love the easy pick. Well, I'm looking for Rory to play better. You can get in the 60s, and I'm looking for this and that. And then eventually something grabbed me, and I'm like, get your head out of your rear end. And someone just has to acknowledge that Brendan Todd is playing some fantastic golf, and he's done so the entire year, and we have to give him love.
Yeah. Rick and I gave him basically the win on Friday night.
We tried.
We tried.
But then it's the same folks that are going to have a whole bunch to say about the guy. Well, that's two now. The Travelers, he stumbled with Dustin Johnson alongside, and now he's got a thoroughbred field alongside of him, and he stumbled too.
But I don't feel like that's fair to him. Like, it would be one thing if that was John Rahm, and John Rahm blows a 3-stroke lead at the Travelers, and then he blows a lead at the TPC Southwind. But for Todd, it's like, I don't know, man. Still a great story. Like, there's definitely a different curve that you're grading on, and so. For him, is it disappointing? Absolutely, because he's going out there thinking, hey, I can win this, and he should. He's one of the best 50 players in the world right now. But the way that we look at it, I just don't feel a ton of disappointment about the way Todd is playing overall, because he's in all of these events. It's mm-hmm. It's incredible.
Amen. And I want to take this to kind of an ethereal level just real fast. This guy ought to be inspiration to everybody who's struggling with their golf game right now. Because he was in the doldrums, man. There was a graphic that they showed that CBS put together where it was like a graph of where his world ranking was. And the dude was inside the top 50. All of a sudden, he was outside the top 2,000. And, you know, this week he had a chance if he won, which, again, this is like you're with your board and you're like, well, if Justin Thomas does all the right things. And people go, no. So if he won, he could have been inside the top, what was it? 13, I think it was. Correct me on the numbers, but this guy's is an inspiration, and my head is off to him. I'm like, man, that sucked that it didn't finish out well, but good on you, man. You just keep on getting up, and you've had the biggest get up of anyone in a long time.
So this week, last year, he finished T53 at the Barbasol to move into 884 in the world.
Yeah.
He was outside the top 2,000.
This is not like a Tony Finau or a Ricky Fowler or a guy who's been a top player in the world who's like win stricken. He's won twice this year, and he's continuing to put himself in the mix. And he had the full swing yips last year.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, he had the full swing yips.
Yeah.
So to take anything away from him, these are learning experiences, right? I mean, if you're Brendan Todd, the takeaway is at both the Travelers and this event, you weren't aggressive enough early. You didn't make any birdies early. And it was basically, I mean, close to 9 straight pars both times. And you didn't get yourself in position to take the next step. You didn't give yourself any cushion to make a mistake. And so everything is kind of on that fine line because you're not making any birdies. And that's what he has to take going forward. But it's not a knock on him, right? I mean, this is a completely different situation than Ricky Fowler and Tony Finau to me.
This is one of my favorite stories of the year. Heck of a year from Brendan Todd. Greg, let's stay here with you. You won our matchup belt last week.
How about that?
Congratulations. This is your first time.
My first matchup win. I've been struggling in that department a little bit. So it was nice to pull off that little victory. And yeah, I'm happy with it. The burger, Fitzpatrick, Sungjae Im getting a win over Leishman. Those are some big pickups for me there. So and look, Patrick Reed beating Tony Finau, that was a big one too.
7-4, you were. Why did we do 11? How do we get 11 props? Was that for a tiebreak situation?
Nobody should earn a victory for the Rory Rahm matchup. That should just throw it out.
Just two L's.
Yeah. Also, yeah, I kind of agree.
Greg, you get to share the, I don't want to say winning because you guys had Daniel Berger, but you and Mark both had Daniel Berger in the one and done pool, but that now pushes you up to 4.7 million points, a pretty commanding lead in our one and done, but we've got a big tournament coming up, so don't get too ahead of yourself.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about, it's got to be over 2 million points next week. So this is really the big one. So, there's a lot of golf left to be played. And I kind of feel like Justin Thomas right now in the player of the year race. I'm definitely the front runner. I should definitely, if I do what I'm supposed to do, I should be the player of the year at the end of this year. But there's still a major upcoming, and there's maybe a Webb Simpson or somebody who could jump up and take it from me.
Yeah, this is when you look at what bullets you got in your ammunition still. You're like, yeah. Oh, dang, I've used Justin Thomas already.
Yeah, when Greg rolls out Scott Stallings for the PGA Championship, where we know he's emptied the chamber.
I already picked him.
I can't believe we didn't get make a pick for Barracuda. And we could have had, like, I could have picked Alonto. He would have been, like, a favorite. Next week, PGA Championship, gentlemen. Greg, you and I are going to do a full DFS breakdown here, but it should probably be no surprise that there's a couple of big dogs atop the William Hill betting odds. Now co-favorites, Justin Thomas and Bryson DeChambeau at 10-1, and then immediately behind, Brooks Koepka, Rory McIlroy, 11-1.
Yeah, man, Justin Thomas is playing so well, and he's kind of shown, I think he can pull something off back-to-back, but I'm interested to see, there's going to be a massive temperature change. I mean, you're going from Memphis where it's like 90, you know, it's hot down there, ask Kyle, and then you go over to San Francisco and it gets extremely cold, right? You're talking mid-60s with some wind blowing. You're going to see sweaters out there, and so I'm excited to see what happens with that. If you're it's like a, you know, kind of going to a different part of the world, so very excited to see. But for me, the guy I'm looking at, Xander Schauffele. I think he's just kind of building. He's peaking. T6 so far this week. So I think Xander's heading in the right direction. I think the course will fit his game.
Xander's been really, really good. KP, are we going to find out if Bryson's mad scientist stuff works next week, right? This is what we've all been talking about.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the PGA is obviously substantially different than a Masters, a U.S. Open, an Open Championship. I think if you look at the PGA, it's normally the most akin to a PGA Tour event, right? Like in terms of setup and all that stuff. So I don't know that we'll get a true sense of like a I don't know. I mean, honestly, like I feel like Muirfield Village might be set up more like what we would view as a major championship a couple weeks ago than Harding Park. I don't, and maybe I'm wrong. Mark will be out there. I don't envision Harding Park being fast and firm. I envision the rough being long. I envision it being like Bethpage Black, like high rough, playing deep, kind of wet, kind of cool at times. And so I actually like Bryson next week. I don't know that it tells us about his like major championship potential at the other three majors, but I kind of like his game going in terms of, I said this on HQ, if you're the long, everybody's going to hit it in the rough. If you're the longest guy and you're hitting sand wedges and gap wedges out of the rough, and Kevin Kisner's hitting a 5-iron trying to get it through that rough, I mean, you just have such a distinct advantage that I think he's going to have a good week.
Okay, Mark, you're not on site yet, obviously. I'm very interested when we get the breakdown, but what are you expecting from TPC Harding Park next week?
Well, I've gotten word from a couple of our crew out there already, and they're like, pack cold weather clothing because it's chilly. I mean, they say it's mornings are high 50s, afternoons are 65 and so, but it's colder than that because it's that damp cold off the bay, which for me, all of a sudden, kind of narrows the field already. You know, folks who are battling injury, you know, Jason Day here is playing into form. And all of a sudden next week, he becomes a question mark because he battles a tender back. Tiger Woods, you know, I'm keen to see what Brooks Koepka and the knee feel like next week. Because the golf course has got some ups and downs. But if there's moist conditions underfoot, that just becomes a very tough walk. Because, you know, you can't get as much traction on the ground. So that's the first thing I'm interested to see. And then the next thing is just how the golf course has been set up in comparison to what I saw in late February. You know, when I saw it in February, we were given a grid of what the course looked like for the public play and where the fairways were cut to. And these fairways are like 20 yards wide in places. And the rough is, when I was there, I would say it was a couple inches deep, but it was lush. I spoke to my spotter and he's out there and he goes, the rough is thick, but it's spotty in places. So he goes, if you hit a few real wide balls, you could get away with something. But if you're just off the fairway, you're going to have yourself a real tough time. So there are a lot of questions that I have. The main thing is, I think, dealing with the temperature. And when you've got an early morning tea time, you're going to have one of them, Thursday or Friday. Are you able to get by that one? And if you're battling with the body, because it's been a pretty hectic stretch. So I think the folks that are rested coming into this thing will kind of have a slight advantage, if anything. But I know one thing's for certain. You're going to have to play out of the fairway. And if the conditions remain soft, I haven't looked at the weather forecast, even though you got the advantage of hitting a wedge in there for a long guy. Soft greens means someone can hit a 5-iron there and have the ball stick. Now, what we saw at Bethpage Black last year was heavy rough, and the greens were pretty firm. And so you had to be a Koepka or a Dustin Johnson, these sorts of guys who were in contention. But if the greens are soft, then if you're playing out the fairway, you can still compete.
So you're saying that being farther away from the center of the fairway is better, and that Phil Mickelson just finished T2 at TPC Southland.
Or Jordan Spieth. All jokes aside, I have a mark this down. I have a funny feeling Spieth is going to be a part of the story.
The grand slam. But tell me this real quick, Mark. Isn't it better, like, if the fairways are 20 yards wide or whatever, like, just really narrow, nobody's going to hit that fairway, right? So doesn't that, like, make distance even more important? So you're hitting wedges out of the rough instead of 5-irons?
Yeah, that's a good point. But the truth of it is, like let's say Brendan Todd, for argument's sake, he's hitting 7 out of 10 fairways, basically. Guys like him, because the golf course, what's it, 7,400, I think? I haven't looked at the final number. So, you know, if you hit 7 out of 10 fairways around that place and you're missing the right places, you're going to be okay. And the key is soft greens. It's, you know, soft greens, like Phil, you made a good call on that. He always plays well at Pebble. Small, soft greens, fairways receptive, so he can just blast away. And so if you get caught yourself, if you get caught with your pens down around the greens, you got Phil Mickelson who can scramble and stuff. That's also going to be a large part of the test, I think.
So if you look at to your point, Mark, it's very interesting. The guys who have won here, you got Tiger Woods, who won in 2005. He also went 5-0 in the President's Cup. He was very long at that time. John Daly came in second. Sergio Garcia came in third. You have excellent drivers of the golf ball in the top three there. In the match play, you had Rory and Woodland in the final, but then you had Jim Furyk and Danny Willett, who were the semifinalists. I know it's match play, so it's a little bit different, but there is a way to play the golf course without being a bomber. I think if you had a match play event at Bethpage Black in the conditions the PGA was last year, I don't think you would have a Danny Willett, a Jim Furyk in the final. I think it was a greater advantage for the bombers at the PGA at Bethpage. Like it was mandatory there. Here, I think there's going to be somebody like a Brendan Todd type style who can probably put together a good week. I'm just not sure they're going to have the ability to win. To Kyle's point, I mean, being really long here seems to be, with the limited history we have here, it seems to be a really big advantage.
Yeah, you know, last week we were asked for a PGA preview show to give our picks, and I said, you're going to have to drive it around there. So I like McIlroy. You know, if you can drive it long and in play, you're fine. And then you look at our golf plays in San Francisco, and I want to build on what you said there, Greg, just over the road at Olympic. Now, that place is built on the side of a hill, so it's a different test, but you're playing essentially in the same conditions. Similar green, similar grass, similar rough, cypress trees. It's the same sort of look. The Olympics just tilted. Look at who played well there in U.S. Opens. Webb Simpson, Jim Furyk, Payne Stewart, Lee Jansen. You know, these guys are sort of people that keep the ball in front of them a bunch. Although I think Harding Park will, the big hitters will have some advantage.
Well, we're going to see if one of the big dogs wins the golf tournament. And Greg, if you know, you might have a chance to win $4,000. Would you like that?
Yes.
Okay, here's a way to win $4,000. The props game for the PGA Championship already live. That's right, right now, over at cbssports.com/golfprops. And for the PGA Championship, you can win $4,000, biggest prize we've had yet. I've already come up with the questions. They're already out there, and I've got one here for you, gentlemen. Greg, the question is, will one of the big five, everyone knows what that means, win the PGA Championship? And just for those uninitiated, the big five being the top five betting favorites. So that would be Justin Thomas, Bryson DeChambeau, Brooks Koepka, Rory McIlroy, John Rahm. You can have those guys or you can have the field.
I'm going to take the field because of what I just said earlier, right? I mean, you didn't mention Xander there. So I'm going to go with the field, but it's a tough one.
It is a tough one, KP. The goal was to kind of split up the win equity, right? If the top five guys have like half the win equity, maybe the rest of the other, what 151, I don't know how many are in the field next week, would have the other half. Do you want the big five or do you want the field?
I think I want the big five just because of the driving distance thing that I mentioned, and those guys are among that group. I have no idea who to pick. Like I said last week, I was feeling Rory. And then you watch him at Southland, and you're like, is he going to win the P? I might pick JT again. Like, I don't like picking guys back-to-back weeks, but he might just be on a heater. Like, that number might be 35 next week.
Yeah, you're going to run out of note cards there with all these wins that JT is racking up. I agree. This is a very difficult one. I mean, even Patrick Cantlay, who played himself out of the golf tournament on Thursday, played awesome on the weekend. Mark, I know you like Rory. Can I offer you him and the other four against the rest of the field?
I typically go with a field just because of the odds of it. You've got 100, what's it, five versus, what's the field, 144, so you've got 139 guys. Yeah, now I know some of the folks are never going to win the PGA, but the odds are still in your favor. And you reference Cantlay. I mean, he popped to mind. Xander is a good pick. I think someone like a Justin Rose, even though he's been playing poorly, could be a wild card. There's some guys to bear in mind, but the way the five is stacking up, I'm with Kyle. I'm going to go with the five.
All right, final word here, Greg. Late breaking news. John Daly has withdrawn from the PGA Championship. Your first reaction?
No carts.
No carts. Can't play. That's it. All right, that'll do it. We'll obviously be back all next week for the only major championship of the season. I'm obviously very excited about it. Let me thank Mark Immelman, who you can find on Twitter at @Mark_Immelman. Let me thank Kyle Porter, who you can find on Twitter at @KylePorterCBS. Let me thank Greg Ducharme, who you can find on Twitter at @TheRealGFD. You can find me at @RickRunGood. This has been The First Cut. We'll catch you next time.
CBS Monday.
NCIS. Here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent island, you got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday starting at 9/8 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.